though I dare say you still like mushrooms." He laughed. "Ah, yes, I recognise the name. I recollect the time when young Frodo Baggins was one of the worst young rascals of Buckland. But it wasn't mushrooms I was thinking of. I had just heard the name Baggins before you turned up. What do you think that funny customer asked me?" They waited anxiously for him to go on. "Well," the farmer continued, approaching his point with slow relish, "he came riding on a big black horse in at the gate, which happened to be open, and ride up to my door. All black he was himself, too, and cloaked and hooded up, as if he didn't want to be known. Now, what in the shire can he want?" I thought to myself. "We don't see many of the big folk over the border, and anyway, I'd never heard of any like this black fellow. "Good day to you," I says, going out to him. "This lane don't lead anywhere, and wherever you may be going, your quickest way will be back to the road." I didn't like the looks of him, and when Grip came out, he took one sniff and let out a yelp as if he'd been stung. He put down his tail and bolted off howling. The black fella sat quite still. "I come from yonder," he said, slow and stiff-like, pointing back west over my fields, if you please. "Have you seen Baggins?" he asked in a queer voice, and bent low towards me. I couldn't see any face, for his hood fell down so low, and I felt a sort of shiver down my back. But I didn't see why he should come riding over my land so bold. "Be off," I said. "There are no Bagginses here. You're in the wrong part of the shire. You'd better go back west to Hobbiton, but you can go by road this time." "Baggins has left," he answered in a whisper. "He's coming. He's not far away. I wish to find him. If he passes, will you tell me? I will come back with gold." "No, you won't," I said. "You'll go back where you belong, double quick. I give you 1 minute before I call all my dogs." He gave a sort of hiss. It might have been laughing, and it might not. Then he spurred his great horse right at me, and I jumped out of the way only just in time. I called the dogs, but he swung off and rode through the gate and up the lane toward the causeway like a bolt of thunder. What do you think of that?" Frodo sat for a moment looking at the fire, but his only thought was how on earth would they reach the ferry. "I don't know what to think," he said at last. "Then I'll tell you what to think," said Maggot. "You should never have gone mixing up yourself with Hobbiton folk, Mr. Frodo. Folk are queer up there." Sam stirred in his chair and looked at the farmer with an unfriendly eye. "But you were always a reckless lad. When I heard you had left the brandy bucks and gone off to that old Mr. Bilbo, I said that you were going to find trouble. Mark my words, this all comes of those strange doings of Mr. Bilbo's. His money was got in some strange fashion in foreign parts, they say. Maybe there's some that want to know what has become of the gold and jewels that he buried in the hill of Hobbiton, as I hear." Frodo said nothing. The shrewd guesses of the farmer were rather disconcerting. "Well, Mr. Frodo," Maggot went on, "I'm glad that you've had the sense to come back to Buckland. My advice is stay here, and don't get mixed up with those outlandish folk. You'll have friends in these parts. If any of these black fellas come after you again, I'll deal with them. I'll say you're dead, or have left the shire, or anything you like. And that might be true enough, for as like as not, it's old Mr. Bilbo they want news of." "Maybe you're right," said Frodo, avoiding the farmer's eye and staring at the fire. Maggot looked at him thoughtfully. "Well, I see you have ideas of your own," he said. "It's as plain as my nose that no accident brought you and that rider here on the same afternoon, and maybe my news was no great news to you after all. I'm not asking you to tell me anything you have a mind to keep to yourself, but I see you're in some kind of trouble. Perhaps you're thinking it won't be too easy to get to the ferry without being caught."
"I was thinking so," said Frodo. "But we've got to try and get there,
and it won't be done by sitting and thinking. So I'm afraid we must be going. Thank you very much indeed for your kindness. I've been in terror of you and your dogs for over 30 years, Farmer Maggot, though you may laugh to hear it. It's a pity, for I've missed a good friend, and now I'm sorry to leave so soon. But I'll come back, perhaps, one day, if I get a chance. You'll be welcome when you come, said Maggot. But now I've a notion. It's near sundown already, and we're going to have our supper, for we mostly go to bed soon after the sun. If you and Mr. Peregrine and all could stay and have a bite with us, we would be pleased. And so should we, said Frodo. But we must be going at once, I'm afraid. Even now it will be dark before we can reach the ferry. Ah, but wait a minute. I was going to say, after a bit of supper, I'll get out a small wagon and I'll drive you all to the ferry. That will save you a good step, and it might also save you trouble of another sort. Frodo now accepted the invitation gratefully, to the relief of Pippin and Sam. The sun was already behind the western hills, and the light was failing. Two of Maggot's sons and his three daughters came in, and a generous supper was laid on the large table. The kitchen was lit with candles, and the fire was mended. Mrs. Maggot bustled in and out. One or two other hobbits belonging to the farm household came in. In a short while, 14 sat down to eat. There was beer in plenty, and a mighty dish of mushrooms and bacon, besides much other solid farmhouse fare. The dogs lay by the fire and gnawed rinds and cracked bones. When they'd finished, the farmer and his sons went out with a lantern and got the wagon ready. It was dark in the yard when the guests came out. They threw their packs on board and climbed in. The farmer sat in the driving seat and whipped up his two stout ponies. His wife stood in the light of the open door.
"You be careful of yourself, Maggot," she called. "Don't go arguing with any foreigners, and come straight back."
"I will," said he, and drove out of the gate. There was now no breath of wind stirring. The night was still and quiet, and a chill was in the air. They went without lights and took it slowly. After a mile or two, the lane came to an end, crossing a deep dike and climbing a short slope up onto the high-banked causeway. Maggot got down and took a good look either way, north and south, but nothing could be seen in the darkness, and there was not a sound in the still air. Thin strands of river mist were hanging above the dikes and crawling over the fields.
"It's going to be thick," said Maggot, "but I'll not light my lanterns till I turn for home. We'll hear anything on the road long before we meet it tonight."
It was 5 miles or more from Maggot's Lane to the ferry. The hobbits wrapped themselves up, but their ears were strained for any sound above the creak of the wheels and the slow clop of the ponies' hoofs. The wagon seemed slower than a snail to Frodo. Beside him, Pippin was nodding toward sleep, but Sam was staring forwards into the rising fog. They reached the entrance to the ferry lane at last. It was marked by two tall white posts that suddenly loomed up on their right. Farmer Maggot drew in his ponies, and the wagon creaked to a halt. They were just beginning to scramble out when suddenly they heard what they had all been dreading, hoofs on the road ahead. The sound was coming towards them. Maggot jumped down and stood holding the ponies' heads and peering forward into the gloom. Clip-clop, clip-clop came the approaching rider. The fall of the hooves sounded loud in the still, foggy air.
"You'd better be hidden, Mr. Frodo," said Sam anxiously. "You get down in the wagon and cover up with blankets, and we'll send this rider to the rightabouts."
He climbed out and went to the farmer's side. Black riders would have to ride over him to get near the wagon. Clip-clop, clip-clop, the rider was nearly on them.
"Hello there," cried Farmer Maggot.
The advancing hooves stopped short. They thought they could dimly guess a dark, cloaked shape in the mist, a yard or two ahead.
"Now then," said the farmer, throwing the reins to Sam and striding forward. "Don't you come a step nearer. What do you want, and where are you going?"
"I want Mr. Baggins. Have you seen him?"
said a muffled voice. But the voice was the voice of Merry Brandybuck. A dark lantern was uncovered, and its light fell on the astonished face of the farmer.
"Mr. Merry!" he cried.
"Yes, of course. Who did you think it was?"
said Merry, coming forward. As he came out of the mist and their fears subsided, he seemed suddenly to diminish to ordinary hobbit size. He was riding a pony, and a scarf was swathed round his neck and over his chin to keep out the fog. Frodo sprang out of the wagon to greet him.
"So there you are at last," said Merry. "I was beginning to wonder if you'd turn up at all today, and I was just going back to supper. When it grew foggy, I came across and rode up towards Stock to see if you'd fallen in any ditches. But I'm blessed if I know which way you've come.
Where did you find them, Mr. Maggot? In your duck pond?"
"No, I caught them trespassing," said the farmer, "and nearly set my dogs on them. But they'll tell you all the story, I've no doubt. Now, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Merry and Mr. Frodo and all, I'd best be turning for home. Mrs. Maggot will be worriting with the night getting thick."
He backed the wagon into the lane and turned it.
"Well, good night to you all," he said. "It's been a queer day, and no mistake. But all's well as ends well, though perhaps we should not say that until we reach our own doors. I'll not deny that I'll be glad now when I do."
He lit his lanterns and got up. Suddenly he produced a large basket from under the seat.
"I was nearly forgetting," he said. "Mrs. Maggot put this up for Mr. Baggins with her compliments."
He handed it down and moved off, followed by a chorus of thanks and good nights. They watched the pale rings of light round his lanterns as they dwindled into the foggy night. Suddenly Frodo laughed. From the covered basket he held, the scent of mushrooms was rising. Chapter 5. A Conspiracy Unmasked.
"Now we'd better get home ourselves," said Merry. "There's something funny about all this, I see, but it must wait till we get in."
They turned down the ferry lane, which was straight and well kept, and edged with large whitewashed stones. In 100 yards or so it brought them to the river bank, where there was a broad wooden landing stage. A large flat ferry boat was moored beside it. The white bollards near the water's edge glimmered in the light of 2 lamps on high posts. Behind them the mists in the flat fields were now above the hedges, but the water before them was dark, with only a few curling wisps like steam among the reeds by the bank. There seemed to be less fog on the further side. Merry led the pony over a gangway onto the ferry, and the others followed. Merry then pushed slowly off with a long pole. The brandy wine flowed slow and broad before them. On the other side the bank was steep, and up it a winding path climbed from the further landing. Lamps were twinkling there. Behind loomed up the Buck Hill, and out of it, through stray shrouds of mist, shone many round windows, yellow and red. They were the windows of Brandy Hall, the ancient home of the Brandybucks. Long ago, Gordondad Oldbuck, head of the Oldbuck family, one of the oldest in the Marish, or indeed in the Shire, had crossed the river, which was the original boundary of the land eastwards. He built and excavated Brandy Hall, changed his name to Brandybuck, and settled down to become master of what was virtually a small, independent country. His family grew and grew, and after his days continued to grow, until Brandy Hall occupied the whole of the low hill and had 3 large front doors, many side doors, and about 100 windows. The Brandybucks and their numerous dependents then began to burrow, and later to build, all round about. That was the origin of Buckland, a thickly inhabited strip between the river and the Old Forest, a sort of colony from the Shire. Its chief village was Bucklebury, clustering in the banks and slopes behind Brandy Hall. The people in the Marish were friendly with the Bucklanders, and the authority of the master of the hall, as the head of the Brandybuck family was called, was still acknowledged by the farmers between Stock and Rushy. but most of the folk of the old shire regarded the Bucklanders as peculiar, half-foreigners, as it were. Though, as a matter of fact, they were not very different from the other hobbits of the Four Farthings, except in one point. They were fond of boats, and some of them could swim. Their land was originally unprotected from the east, but on that side they had built a hedge, the High Hay. It had been planted many generations ago, and was now thick and tall, for it was constantly tended. It ran all the way from Brandywine Bridge, in a big loop curving away from the river, to Hay's End, where the Withy Windle flowed out of the forest into the Brandywine, well over 20 miles from end to end. But, of course, it was not a complete protection. The forest drew close to the hedge in many places. The Bucklanders kept their doors locked after dark, and that also was not usual in the shire. The ferry boat moved slowly across the water. The Buckland shore drew nearer. Sam was the only member of the party who had not been over the river before. He had a strange feeling as the slow, gurgling stream slipped by. His old life lay behind in the mists. Dark adventure lay in front. He scratched his head, and for a moment had a passing wish that Mr. Frodo could have gone on living quietly at Bag End. The four hobbits stepped off the ferry. Merry was tying it up, and Pippin was already leading the pony up the path, when Sam, who had been looking back, as if to take farewell of the shire, said in a hoarse whisper,
"Look back, Mr. Frodo. Do you see anything?"
On the far stage, under the distant lamps, they could just make out a figure. It looked like a dark black bundle left behind. But as they looked, it seemed to move and sway this way and that, as if searching the ground. It then crawled, or went crouching, back into the gloom beyond the lamps.
"What in the shire is that?" exclaimed Merry.
"Something that is following us," said Frodo. "But don't ask any more now. Let's get away at once." They hurried up the path to the top of the bank, but when they looked back, the far shore was shrouded in mist, and nothing could be seen. "Thank goodness you don't keep any boats on the west bank," said Frodo. "Can horses cross the river?" "They can go 20 miles north to Brandywine Bridge, or they might swim," answered Merry. "Though I never heard of any horse swimming the Brandywine. But what have horses to do with it?" "I'll tell you later. Let's get indoors and then we can talk." "All right. You and Pippin know your way, so I'll just ride on and tell Fatty Bulger that you're coming. We'll see about supper and things." "We had our supper early with Farmer Maggot," said Frodo. "But we could do with another."
"You shall have it. Give me that basket," said Merry, and rode ahead into the darkness.
It was some distance from the Brandywine to Frodo's new house at Crick Hollow. They passed Buck Hill and Brandy Hall on their left, and on the outskirts of Bucklebury struck the main road of Buckland that ran south from the bridge. Half a mile northward along this, they came to a lane opening on their right. This they followed for a couple of miles as it climbed up and down into the country. At last they came to a narrow gate in a thick hedge. Nothing could be seen of the house in the dark. It stood back from the lane in the middle of a wide circle of lawn, surrounded by a belt of low trees inside the outer hedge. Frodo had chosen it because it stood in an out-of-the-way corner of the country, and there were no other dwellings close by. You could get in and out without being noticed. It had been built a long while before by the Brandybucks for the use of guests or members of the family that wished to escape from the crowded life of Brandy Hall for a time. It was an old-fashioned, countrified house, as much like a hobbit hole as possible. It was long and low, with no upper story, and it had a roof of turf, round windows, and a large round door. As they walked up the green path from the gate, no light was visible. The windows were dark and shuttered. Frodo knocked on the door, and Fatty Bulger opened it. A friendly light streamed out. They slipped in quickly and shut themselves and the light inside. They were in a wide hall with doors on either side. In front of them, a passage ran back down the middle.